Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 55, and we'll have Phil Wilson of Scouts, Inc. joining us on the second half of the podcast to get into the Colts, and as we do every Wednesday. But, Dave, let's get started here. And you know, the good thing, Dave, is that we're doing this on Wednesday. And the news cycle of the last 24 hours has finally come full circle. But it became the national story in the NFL about Ben Roethlisberger, whether he did or didn't have a concussion. It was the lead story on Russillo and Cannell on ESPN Radio. People talking about it all day yesterday. And it turned out to be semantics, more or less, because Ben Roethlisberger this morning has been cleared to practice. So we don't have to spend our whole hour talking about whether he had a concussion or didn't have a concussion. He said he didn't on his radio show. Mike Tomlin, an hour later, said he did. And it just caused, I don't know what it caused, but it caused a lot of airtime being talked about something that didn't seem to be too serious.
Yeah, you almost wonder if they, one side was trying to be a little bit PC there, right? Because of all this stuff with Case Keenum and you know, the focus back on the concussion.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
You know, you'd almost wonder maybe Ben actually was cleared, but the Steelers just wanted to maybe not make it seem so soon after it happened. Look, I'm only guessing there, but I'm with you. The last thing I want to do is spend, you know, 30 minutes of this show talking about concussion protocol and you know, everything that goes along with that. And you're right. Ben talked to the media this morning, claims he's, you know, passed a final concussion impact test, I guess, expects to practice Wednesday. So we'll see if he goes full or not later when the injury report comes out. But barring anything unforeseen at this, you know, point in time, I will be surprised if he does not play Sunday night.
Yeah.
Shocked.
Yeah. Right. So it looks like a go. And not to dismiss the whole issue, and for the league, it's still going to be a question of, you know, did the spotter do anything wrong? Should they have taken him out of the game? Should they have stopped the game at least to question him and make sure he was okay? I don't have great answers to that, and, you know, we'll just see how things go. But let's get to the press conference, because there was a lot there, and we'll see what happens with Heath and Ryan Shazier. They're the two guys who are, I would say, most questionable as to whether they will go. Mike Mitchell a little banged up in the knee, apparently. Spence with the hamstring. Tomlin didn't even initially mention him, so we can assume maybe he'll be ready to go. But the most interesting thing, obviously, is at the cornerback position. And I asked him directly about it, first question in the press conference. He gave a very expansive, full answer. I give him great credit for everything he said. And reading the tea leaves, I would be shocked if Antoine Blake is starting on Sunday night.
Absolutely. And I know that'll make a lot of our listeners happy to hear that. We talked the other day, right, about wait till you put on the tape to see how Antoine Blake, you know, attempted to tackle in that game against the Seahawks. I think it's obvious, David, that you know, he's playing with multiple injuries. And if indeed that's the case, I mean, this is not the same. Not that Antoine Blake was ever going to be close to being accused of being a Pro Bowl player, but this is a far less reliable player, especially when it comes to physicality and tackling, than he, you know, has been previously with this team. And it really makes you wonder, being as how it's easy to notice this on tape. Heck, even dating as far back as what? Maybe maybe the Kansas City Chiefs game, you know, where trying to shoulder tackle on that one and missing there. How he can keep rolling Antoine Blake out there, I guess it's what, the definition of insanity, right, with what they were trying to do. So even though Mike Tomlin did not come right out and say Brandon Boykin's going to be our you know, starting nickel guy this week against the Colts, at this point, judging on what he did say, I will be shocked once again if that doesn't happen.
Exactly. I mean, look, you don't expect him to announce his starter on Tuesday, but the fact that they'll look at different options, they talked about moving Will Gay outside, and I think that pretty much sets it up that Will Gay's going to move outside, Boykin's going to slide into the slot, and I would assume that Ross Cockrell will still be the starter over Blake, but you know, I guess that's still open to debate. But yeah, I'll be shocked. I was a little surprised that in talking about the secondary, he didn't talk about Robert Golden. He didn't mention the safeties at all in this conversation. He wasn't asked about it, but based on what he didn't say, I would assume the safety position is going to stay the same.
Yeah, but you would think they would. I mean, look, if you're going to examine it, you need to examine it, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
And God bless Will Allen. You know, I have a fan favorite for sure, and a Mike Tomlin favorite even more. He's just not getting it done back there. And we talked a little bit about that last time too. You know, football IQ and being cerebral will only get you so far. And we saw during those several games that Will Allen missed with that ankle injury of his that Robert Golden played. You know, I don't want to say lights out, but you know, consistent, physical, appeared to be most times in the right spot. So you know, if you're going to change one, you know, why wouldn't you go ahead and change the other spot? I mean, you still could always turn back to Will Allen if need be. But yeah, while you're making changes, why not change it up back there? And this in my opinion would be a good week to do it as well too, considering you got a guy in Matt Hasselbeck that's likely to try to more dink and dunk you than anything. You know, granted, he will go deep a few times to T.Y. Hilton and Moncrief and all like that. But, you know, I don't think you're going to see a guy try to stretch the field vertically with four wide receivers or three wide receivers and a tight end running four verticals the way Russell Wilson did Sunday. So, it's definitely something to look for, and I was hoping that you or someone else would have asked him specifically about the safety position because obviously he wasn't going to just volunteer that information.
Yeah, and Dave, in terms of Cockrell versus Blake, I mean, your expectation would be that Cockrell stays and Blake is the guy who sits down?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I would do it right now. And look, I know Cockrell's had some pass. He's had some nice plays this year. He has been beat as well, too, and he's probably you know, comparing a healthy Cockrell to a healthy Blake, I don't think he's as physical of a defender, especially against the run. But Cockrell has more availability right now than Blake obviously does. So, I'm with you. I would put Cockrell on the outside. Let's just hope we don't get into a situation where they're trying to shuttle both those guys in and out of the game as well, too, because we know how substitution problems kind of plagued this team early on in the season, right? And you know, that's the kind of thing that you worry about there. Can you get the guys on? Can you get the guys off? And if you do get Blake on, it, you know, stick out like a sore thumb. That's kind of a pun there. But, you know, I if you're going to go with Cockrell, just go with Cockrell.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, in terms of expansive answers and being straightforward, that's as much as, you know, we've heard from Mike and the entire tenure, I think, of being a head coach. There was a follow up and he answered it and talked more about it, said, look, these guys didn't do the job. They were below the line. We're not, you know, benching them for life. We'll give them another opportunity. But I think you have to say that. But I'll be shocked if there's not a change at this point in time. And okay, David, then in terms of other things he said, in terms of what's going on, he talked about scheme and disguise and some of the other stuff pretty straightforward. I asked him about the fake field goal. He talked about Landry Jones. He had a very interesting answer about guys using timeouts on the field, basically saying, They're not allowed to. I mean, the only guy who's allowed to use the timeout is Ben Roethlisberger, which is a bit of a surprise. You would think who's ever calling the defense, whether it's Lawrence Timmons or whoever it may be, if they're not aligned right or don't have the right number of guys on the field, they would have the, you know, have the wherewithal to use the timeout. But Mike was pretty adamant about that.
Yeah, most definitely. And you would think it still makes you wonder, right, David, if the end of the quarter, if the end of the first quarter didn't happen right there on that fourth down, do you think they had every intention of going for it, or do you think that was a clear attempt to get Seattle to jump offside?
I think it was an offside. I think it was they wanted to get them to jump offside. And I don't know if, you know, just at the quarter he's like, okay, you know what, let's do this. But I think it was just an offside thing.
Okay, because you see kind of Roethlisberger clap his hands walking off the field after the timeout, almost like, oh, okay. You know, in fact, I think it caught the whole offense by surprise at the end of the quarter. It caught referees by surprise too, because it's like, what, 4 seconds elapsed before, after the after the clock turned zero. But interesting there. What did you think about his explanation for kicking the field goal at the end?
At the end of the game?
Yeah.
I thought he gave a reasonable explanation that I disagree with his choice, but I thought his explanation was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he framed it. I mean, and if anybody knows how to do that, it's him.
Yep. No, I did. I thought he framed it very well. He said, you know, if you didn't, for those who didn't hear it, the point was whether we kick the field goal, whether we score a touchdown or don't score a touchdown, we need to get a stop. And so I wanted to have positivity. I want to get the points, have our defense excited about that, and put them out in the field. Now, I still would have gone for it. I think you would have gone for it. But he had an answer for it, as he generally does, and he framed it in a way that, you know, it was at least rational.
Yeah, and as much as I kind of pounded him after the game in the column, I think John Ledard kind of wrote about it the day after as well, too. They still had the Seahawks in a 3rd-and-10 situation, in the ideal situation, right?
Yep.
And I mean, you couldn't ask. And look, one play earlier they almost had a fumble as well too. So it ended up being the ideal situation for the defense. It's just that they couldn't stop that 3rd-and-10 pass, and more than that, they let that 3rd-and-10 pass go 80 yards for a score. So, you get a couple of days removed from this and you hear him talk about it. I understand his reasoning, but I'm with you. I still, let me ask you this. Had the Steelers defense, you weren't in the press box, obviously you were back home. Do you think there's any way Roethlisberger doesn't come back in that game if the Steelers get the ball back?
Well, if you listen to what he said and you believe what he said, so take it however you want.
That's why I'm asking you.
He said that he had the conversation and Doc said, you're done before third down.
Okay.
So, if you believe that.
What do you think would happen?
I don't think he would have come back.
You know, okay, fair enough, and that might have very well look, that type of stuff you just don't screw with, you know. Didn't he say something about having a kind of blurred peripheral vision?
Yep, and thinking about his family on the sideline and that kind of, you know. Look, if he's gone to that point, he didn't go talk to him after the Seahawks scored the touchdown, so that's why I think he wouldn't have come back. He went and talked to him and had the conversation while the Seahawks had the ball. Now let me ask you a question, Dave. Would you have taken the penalty on first down?
You know, I was thinking about that when it happened. And my initial reaction was, why didn't you take the penalty on first down?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand. Because the clock would have restarted, though, right?
No, it wouldn't have restarted there. They just penalty, just start 5. You know, they get an extra play, but start 5 yards further back.
Yeah, and I guess you risk losing another, 25, 30 seconds or whatnot, possibly.
Yeah.
I think I would have taken a penalty, but, like we said, regardless, the defense got in a 3rd-and-10 situation, which was an ideal situation, and would have had, if they had they gotten a stop, they would have gotten the ball back certainly in plenty of time with, 2 timeouts in their pocket at that time as well, too. So
converted 5 third downs of Third and ten or more.
Yeah, ouch. And, he was asked about passing yards during the press conference as well, too, and his concern about that. And, he pointed back that, that's less of a concern because of number of attempts and Cleveland had to pass the ball a lot and got a lot of yards, yada, yada, and still wanted to, draw it back to situational football, which is fine. I mean, look at the Patriots. They've given up quite a few passing yards as well, too, but they're able to get stops when it matters the most. And what we really haven't seen overall, I guess, in the last couple of weeks, and last week specifically for sure, is them not getting those key third down stops when they need them, not coming up with the turnovers in their own end of the field. It's okay to continuously bend as long as you don't break. But boy, they sure did break a lot in that game Sunday, and it kind of worries you moving forward against teams with good quarterbacks that can exploit the cover three, with kind of those four vertical routes. Boykin, whoever you want to put in there, that's where the weakness of this defense definitely is. I would kind of expect maybe to see more kind of cover two shell this week, wouldn't you, or no?
Well, look, if T.Y. is not going to play, I don't even know what schematically. Look, he said, look, we can disguise better. We can play better one-on-one. We can do a lot of things better. Obviously that's the case. They have to do a lot of things better. It just looked like the way they were playing it, that it was too easy. And the first touchdown to me was the worst, maybe. I mean, it was just, it's a third and 16. And who was the guy? Was it Mike Mitchell 5 yards deep in the end zone? The first guy to kind of make contact with Baldwin as he runs a seam route straight up in there. And then,
No. Mitchell was kind of on the other side there. They cleared that out with Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham ran across.
Ran a corner route to kind of freeze everything. And if you look right at the snap of the football, Russell Wilson looks right at Mike Mitchell. And at that point, Mike Mitchell's got to respect that over the top.
Okay, so who was the first guy there? Will Allen?
Will Allen was the underneath zone defender, because what it ended up being was four zone underneath and three deep over the top with Blake on that side deep, having to respect the go route on
the
that
other
side.
Yep.
On his side, you had William Gay dropping curl flat up underneath there. And they just spread them out. Kind of had a nasty split with Graham, just a few yards off of detached from the line. So that kind of makes you widened out a little bit more, with your center fielder safety and Mike Mitchell. And I mean, it was taking candy from a baby, right?
It was so easy.
Quick pitch and catch, and I think Alex kind of pointed out as well too. Traditionally we've seen Steelers kind of play more cover two in those situations. So maybe when they get into situations in the future, from their own 30 in, maybe you kind of see that and kind of force teams to really split the coverages, with some cover two and work the extreme middle of the field by widening out the safeties.
That's a good explanation. But as I was saying, look, it was too easy for these guys up the seam. And look, I mean, at the same time, the Steelers threw for 500 yards or whatever, all in when you threw in the screen to D'Angelo Williams late in the game. They took apart their defense, and we've harped on all the bad things that have happened for most of the hour and a half that we've talked about the since the game ended. I think we went the whole podcast on Monday without mentioning Marcus Wheaton's name.
No, I think we mentioned him and gave him due respect that he deserves. I mean,
does it change anything in terms of how opponents play the Steelers or how the Steelers run their offense? For me, the only thing that's probably different is Ben probably has a comfort level now with Wheaton that he they have seemed to be off mark. Almost the past year and a half. And, you go back to the Cleveland game last year, the Cincinnati game last year, the game against Oakland 2 weeks ago, and it felt like somebody was running the wrong routes, or Ben didn't expect guys to, turn their route where they did or cut it off where they did. Maybe that gives them a new level of comfort and just makes it easier to you know, go to the next guy.
Yeah, but on top of it too, you know, we obviously saw how they handled how they handled Antonio Brown,
right.
And if you go back and you time the time in the pocket on you know 70% of the throws to Wheaton, a lot of that's probably Roethlisberger extending the play, right?
Yeah, how many times do you think he was the first option? Probably not that many.
Right, exactly. So I think that's more of, you know, look, we can go back. What's going to happen this week if Marcus Wheaton has two catches for 11 yards? You know, and that's
what you expect, right? I mean, if you're
right,
betting, you'd bet that, right?
Right, exactly, because you would think that, you know, even though a lot of respect to Vontae Davis, he's not Richard Sherman, and you would think there's going to be opportunities really to get the ball to Antonio Brown out in space. Now, here's you know, something else to consider. Whether or not they have Heath Miller for this game could in fact, help a guy like Marcus Wheaton out in the slot, right? So you know, we need to take that into consideration as well too, because if you know are you really prepared to have your most of your offense, not most, but a portion of your offense, especially the way they started the game against the Seahawks, kind of run through your tight end in the middle of the field and a guy like Jesse James. You know, no disrespect to Jesse James, but he's just not, I mean, can't compare him to Heath Miller yet you know, at this point of his career. So I think because of that, and we'll see whether or not, they, you know, if Miller doesn't play, how much two tight ends they use, because they did spend a lot of time protecting Alejandro Villanueva on that left side with sort of some max protections. And I like that, to be quite honest with you, because if you give Ben Roethlisberger enough time in the pocket, he's going to find somebody open down the field. I mean, because I don't care what receivers you have, generally those guys are going to be able to loosen up against coverage. So it'll be interesting to see how Marcus Wheaton is used in this game. I think Martavis Bryant's got another fantastic matchup, and boy, how many more catches should he have had?
Yeah, in deciding how he played, I had to put him on the negative as opposed to the positive. I mean, he had a great touchdown run. He had some, you know, some good catches, but a couple bad drops. You know, I thought he could have done better. And you talked about it on Monday's podcast about fighting for the ball, high pointing the ball. I think there's a couple times he could have fought through his defender and maybe gotten a pass interference call. But yeah, you expect more from him, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, protection was more than good enough in that game. You hate to use the old cliche, just got to, you know, you need your best players to make plays, but I think a couple of those really could have possibly turned the tide in that game. You asked too about that early ball, I think, to Martavis Bryant down the right side, whether or not it went through his hands.
Yeah.
Did you see that still shot I put up of Shedd getting his hand in there?
I all along I thought Shedd made the play. I thought Shedd, it was, I gave credit to the defender on both those balls. I heard a guy say the one where Bryant, you know, he had to fight for it at the goal line where he fell on his back and he almost had it. I gave Shedd credit on both of them. Is that wrong?
No. You're right. Right on the money there. I mean, but there were, you know, look, we talked about that one. It clanked right off Bryant's hands.
Yeah.
You'd like to see him maybe fight harder for that underthrown ball that maybe you could have drawn a pass interference there. But, you know, you got to put that one behind you. And like I said, I think he's got, you know, if he lines up against Greg Toler this week against the Colts, you just can't cover them all, right? And if you have protection for Ben Roethlisberger, there's no reason to think that they can't, you know, boat race this. And I guess the question becomes, this off, and I think Alex kind of hit on this as well too, the yardage this offense is compiling up once again is not matching the points on the scoreboard. I mean, if this offense can start matching drive yardage on the scoreboard, we could have 50, 60 points a game, right?
You know, look, I think 40 to 45 points is not unrealistic for these guys. You get 10 possessions, you score 6 touchdowns. You know, the kind of that simple.
Yeah, well, you most definitely would like to see it better than what it's been.
And that's after 3 straight 30-point games.
Right. you know, especially with your defense that you have, right? You can't rely on them. So you hate to use the term you need to outscore your opponent, but you really do need to outscore your opponent by quite a bit, in my opinion. Because, look, if you get opposing offenses down in the second half by 10 or more points, you're going to put them in more predictable situations. Remember us talking a couple years ago about Dick LeBeau and where Dick LeBeau's defense really seemed to thrive, you know, at its best. And he took, you know, where he would take the most chances was when he would have opponents down by 10 or more points, and he'd get them in those down and distances where he absolutely knew they were going to have to throw it. That's when, you know, he would blitz more and do a whole, you know, send the safeties off the edge and that kind of stuff. So I think that's a key factor with this Steelers team moving forward, is they've got to get off to a hot start. They've got to get these opposing offenses, who, by the way, most of them aren't going to be with their starting quarterbacks, which I don't know when you get
four out of five. Four to five.
Yeah,
that.
When you get to a team like Denver, I don't know. Are you hoping for Peyton Manning?
I'm hoping for Peyton Manning. Yeah,
to get healthy, real quick on this. I guess it's a good time to segue here. We got an email in from Jeff Berg. I wonder if Jeff's last name really is Berg. If not, that's fantastic. He had some fun with that as a Steelers fan. He said he was totally shocked listening to our podcast the other day, where both of us, and I think, I don't know if it was more begrudgingly or not, both of us thought the Steelers would make the playoffs. And he says he's curious as to why both of us feel that way. And he goes on to list all the games and his fears and all, in these games. So let's kind of explain. We'll start with you. Why do you feel the Steelers are going to make the playoffs?
I think they'll win four or five here. I think they're going to win Sunday. I think they'll win one or two of Cincinnati and Denver, and I think they'll win the last two. So I think you get them to 10 wins. It's a layup. I think you can get in with 9 wins, but I think 10's a layup. Everything went the Steelers' way a couple weeks ago in terms of what happened to all the other teams, and everything went against the Steelers this past weekend. But these teams still got to play each other. They've got – you know, difficult games out there. I think Kansas City's the team I would bet on to make the playoffs. They are a lock. If you look at their schedule, they get two with the Raiders, so they can lose one of those. But they've got, like, the Browns and San Diego, and their schedule is really easy. And it wouldn't actually shock me that they ran the table and finished with 10 straight wins and, you know, 11 on the season. So I think they're in. I think the Steelers will be there, and I now think they're more likely to be the 6 seed than the 5 seed. But I do think the Steelers are going to win 4 out of 5.
Yeah, and I really just kind of echo your comments. And I think it's not only based on I think the Steelers can win four of their remaining 5 as well, too. And on top of that, combined with my reason why I think they make the playoffs, because I think it's going to catch up with Houston at some point here. I really do. I think they're going to lose a couple along the way here. Hopefully those are two AFC teams, right? You know, and then, you know, the Jets. I think the Jets are, you know, have another loss or two in their future as well, too. So I think Jeff, it's a combination with me. It's a little bit of confidence that the Steelers can at least win 4 out of their last 5, and combined with the fact that I think these other teams, most notably the Jets and the Texans, are going to stumble along the way to help the Steelers. Now, obviously, if the Steelers are 9-7, we're going to be doing some scoreboard watching in week 17. However, if you know they can go 10-6, I'm fairly sure that will be enough to get in. And as you said, David, probably as a number 6 seed. However, I wouldn't discount Kansas City, you know, dropping 1 or 2 along the way.
Sure,
and we'll
see
if this Oakland Raiders team can come back alive again. You know, there's nothing guaranteed in there. But I still think Kansas City has some tough games. So, Jeff, we appreciate the email. And look.
Hey, Bob gave us a good one as well, taking the other side and talking about there's a lot to be, you know, enthusiastic about in terms of what this offense did against Seattle. Everybody expected them to lose the game kind of before the season started. This was one that was posted as a loss. And, you know, there's still some good things out there.
Yeah, and he references, you know, the ANY, NEA stat that I like to talk about. And in all fairness, you know, that's not a foolproof stat. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I mean, let's not discount the fact that the Steelers' defense, that number in the last, I think it's three games, is well over eight, which is very disappointing. But on the flip side, the offense's number, and really, you know, when you look at that stat, you want to look at the differential between the offense and the defense, and you want that number to be a differential in a positive of 1.0 or more. That really shows a real stable team. And let's face it, this Steelers team has not been stable on offense this year because of injuries to guys like, of course, quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell. They've been without. They started the season without Martavis Bryant. Go on and on, say, you know, and talk about all the injuries that they've had this season. So, is that number a good representation of where this team is at offensively with the NEA stat? Probably not. You know, I mean, we know Ben can go out and throw for 450 yards and four touchdowns at a drop of the hat, and as long as he's not sacked seven times in that game and turned the football over three times, that number is going to, of course, be high. The big concern, and I'm going to continue stating this for the rest of the season, and hopefully this Boykin change, you know, if indeed it takes place, it will help. But my biggest concern is not so much whether or not the Steelers can make the playoffs, it's whether or not this defense is good enough to win games in the playoffs moving forward. But Bob, that's Bob Francis, that's a great email. I had to do a lot of reading comprehension on that one.
All right, good stuff. Dave, let's get right to it. We got Phil Wilson of Scouts Inc. ready to break down the Colts for us. Okay, welcome back to part two of the Terrible Podcast. And on Wednesdays, as we always do, we like to get a beat guy or a guy who covers the Steelers' opposing team. And this week, of course, 8:30 Sunday night at Heinz Field, they'll be taking on the Indianapolis Colts. And we're pleased to be joined by our buddy Phil Wilson, who is with Scouts.com. And Phil has been with us before and a Pittsburgh native. Phil, as always, thanks for being with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How's it going?
It's going well, but it's not going quite as well as Steeler fans would like it for the Steelers, and things have turned for the Colts. I mean, it really looked like after a couple losses there in the middle of the season, Andrew Luck getting hurt, that maybe this team wasn't going to make the playoffs in a very weak division. And now Matt Hasselbeck at the helm, 4-0 with Hasselbeck there. Let's start big picture. I thought – From you know, the organization with Bob Irsay at the top, the situation that they have, and then Chuck Pagano, what's going on up top? Is Pagano going to be the head coach next year?
Well, Bob Irsay's been dead since the late 90s, so let's let that guy lie, okay? He's the guy that Baltimore still hates. They've got a fake likeness of him in a coffin at a bar over there in Baltimore that I've actually seen. They haven't forgiven him. So, I'm poking fun at you, but to answer your question, I have serious doubts about whether Chuck will be back. And I know that sounds crazy because you look at his record, 11-5, three straight years, and they're 6-5, and they'll probably end up being, 9-7, maybe 10-6 this year, maybe, if they win the AFC South, which even with the loss to the Steelers Sunday night, I still think they can win the AFC South and make the playoffs. You'd be getting rid of a coach, not re-signing him, who would make the playoffs 4 years in a row, and that sounds crazy and doesn't make sense. But that's from the outside looking in. Here in Indy, you're looking at a coach that is a player's coach to a fault. And this team was built supposedly to be able to take on the big boys. And the owner had very, very high expectations for this team. And instead, it's a team that struggled to run the ball and stop the run, as was Chuck's credo when he got the job. General manager Ryan Grigson, former offensive lineman, his number one priority is to build an offensive line. Colts quarterbacks are among the most hit in the NFL and have been since Luck got in the league. So there's a lot of fault and blame to go around for why the Colts are basically what you thought they were and where they are where you left them last year, guys. They're an okay team that wins the AFC South and might make a noise for a round of the playoffs, but probably won't go very far. And Jim Irsay is not satisfied with that. And I think there's a good chance, as many reports have speculated, that Chuck could be let go, or at least in this case, not re-signed after the season.
Is it a given that Grigson's gone, the GM? I mean, who does Jim Irsay think is more responsible for the issue?
Well, that's a good question, because for the longest time I thought Grigson and Mr. Irsay were closely aligned, and that whatever meddling Grigson has done with the lineup and influencing Chuck's decisions and certain players playing and things, I thought that was done with Irsay's blessing. I thought it was Irsay, the old general manager from the 90s, who, you know, screwed it up pretty bad when he was running the team for his old man. I thought that, you know, that was just him being able to have a little more control over his team, which I don't think he felt like he had when Bill Polian was running it. Yes, they won a Super Bowl, but yes, they had the team of the decade with all those wins and division championships in the Peyton Manning era, but only one Super Bowl. Jim Irsay has regrets about that and has said publicly that they should have won more. And he's already said in this last offseason, I expect to win at least two Super Bowls in the Andrew Luck era. He set the bar really high. People can say that's nuts, crazy, it's not right. But he's a billionaire who sets the bar high and expects it to be met and doesn't apologize for it. He's in it to win. He's not in it just to cash checks or write checks to people. So we'll see what happens, but I think now it's fair to say that both Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano are on unsettled ground. Ryan's decisions have left something to be desired in a lot of respects. Everybody remembers the Trent Richardson trade, but some of the guys he brought in the offseason haven't done the job either. He hasn't made things better. The offensive line's still an issue. So at some point, you know, Jim Irsay's got to look in the mirror and say, okay, maybe my problem is twofold. It's not just blaming the coach all the time.
When you look at the Colts offense here, obviously, let's start with this. How big of a loss is Ahmad Bradshaw? You know, because we all know what who Frank Gore is and his style of running all those years in San Francisco. More of a power in between the tackles guy. Although Gore can catch the football, but you know, a guy like Bradshaw, change of pace guy. How big a loss is that, and basically is this going to be an every-down situation for Frank Gore moving forward?
Yeah, you know, Bradshaw reminds me of Steeler players back in the day when I grew up rooting for the Steel Curtain. You know, it wasn't about their numbers. It was about playing the game hard and intense and having a nasty edge and just bringing a swagger to him, just not talking about it, but just the way he played. And some people took issue with me saying, in October before they re-signed him, yeah, re-sign him, get what you can out of him. They thought I was being insensitive about him, but his injury history dictated or basically suggested that he wouldn't stay healthy forever. But I knew he'd be productive when he played, and he scored 3 touchdowns on receptions in 6 games, and he's a ferocious blocker. The running yards weren't there. They didn't give him a lot, but Frank Gore struggled to run the ball too. I think more than anything, it's just a guy that you could count on to do a little bit of everything and shore up maybe the two areas that have helped Matt Hasselbeck the most and Andrew Luck a little bit, being able to dump the ball off out of the flat to a guy who could get good yak yards after catch and more importantly, a guy who will pick up that blitzing linebacker and do it with purpose, do it with you know, bad intentions. I don't think we'd seen in my time covering the beat, we haven't seen a running back pick up blitzers like this since Edgerrin James. And that's the few games Ahmad played, you know, 3 his first year, 10 last year, and then 6 this year. Those 19 games, I knew what I could count on from him. So it's a big deal. Even though he wasn't starting, this team suffered a loss. And it's ironic to me that the Colts have to go to Pittsburgh and play a team that's steeped in that kind of tradition of football, that toughness, and they're not going to have one of their toughest guys.
When you talk about the, you talked a little bit about the offensive line, but overall, when you look at them on tape, you know, their tackles, I think, have played pretty well this season. And I guess the biggest question with them is interior there. And I'm guessing that they're going to be without Khalil Holmes again. So that the other young center is going to have to spend some time in there. Is that where the weakness of this team is inside the tackles on the offensive line?
No, Holmes is no longer hurt. He lost his job. Jonathan Harrison's been starting at center. I think the Colts all along thought Harrison would end up being the better center, but Holmes outplayed him in preseason. Now, whether Holmes took a step back after that or not, I don't know. I mean, first series of the first game at Buffalo, Holmes has an unnecessary holding penalty that cost them a big 25, 30-yard pass play to Dwayne Allen. And from that point on, I've never thought Holmes was that much of a player at center, and I don't know that Harrison's that much better. He's an undrafted guy out of Florida who started 10 games last year until he hit the rookie wall. Those are issues. The interior there, sure, there are issues, but the tackles have also had problems too. Maybe not always giving up sacks, but you know, Anthony Costanzo, the left tackle, is not going to play. He's still week to week with an MCL sprain. He got a big fat contract extension in the offseason, and he's had probably his worst year. He's given up 5 sacks. I think he's had 6 holding calls and 2 or 3 false starts. He lately was playing better the last 2 or 3 games, and then he gets hurt. But we were mystified at how the best lineman on this line all of a sudden went in the tank for a while. And was costing his team. Joe Wright's plug him in at right tackle. He's hung in there. I don't think he's given up many sacks, but he still gives up pressures. And then, yeah, like you said, interior, Jack Nehort at left guard is okay. Not great. Hugh Thornton, a former third-round pick at right guard, okay. Not great. And then the center situation we talked about, you know, very unsettled. You know, they've got issues here that are going to be far-reaching beyond this year. And the sad thing is, or the crazy thing is, the frustrating thing is, we've been talking about them for 2-3 years now. And Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano have told us for 2 years now in the offseason how the offensive line and protecting the franchise quarterback is the number one priority. Well, I'm no rocket scientist, and I grew up in Ohio. I went to Bowling Green State University rooting for my Steelers. But from the naked eye, I would say you far fell short of that objective when your franchise quarterback you desperately need to protect has a sore shoulder from getting the crap knocked out of him, had a rib injury you didn't report, and then a few weeks later, yes, he got hurt in a scramble. He suffers a lacerated kidney and a partially torn abdominal muscle. You know, Andrew might not feel the need to scramble as much as he did and try and make something out of a play if he weren't forced to scramble all the time. He has been the most hit quarterback in this league since he entered in 2012. So, there's people here locally that argue with me on that, but I'm an Andrew Luck defender. I think he's the real deal and the talent. And my biggest fear is that they're wasting him because of other people's mistakes.
Just to be clear, you're expecting Joe Reitz to start at left tackle then again, and then I guess Denzel Good will get another start
yeah.
at left tackle.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they'll do. I think Denzel Good, the rookie 7th-round pick out of Mars Hill, pause so everybody can Google Mars Hill, North Carolina. Denzel got a holding penalty and some false starts. I don't think he was that terrible, but I haven't watched the game over again. I don't think they have much more of an option. Joe Wright is experienced enough to play left tackle, and if you don't put, I think what they were concerned about is they didn't want to mess with the interior. As shaky as that is, don't switch Muhort back out to right tackle and then put somebody else a left guard that's worse. And so you got a bad left guard, a center shaky, right guard. I mean, they wanted to keep as many guys in the same spot as possible inside. So it got it done against Tampa. Hasselbeck got sacked 3 times. One of them was definitely on him for just accepting it too quickly. But he also got hit 11 times. And I've seen too many games this year where Colts quarterbacks have been hit double digits. Whether the sack totals are high or not, the hits are, oh man, it's putting on the hits. You play the Colts, and I just hope the quarterbacks don't get creamed.
Phil, I mean, how is Hasselbeck playing? They're 4-0 with him at the helm. We all assume he's going to get the start this weekend. Has he played well?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Luck is week to week. When the coach says week to week, that means ask about him next week.
Right.
That's the way I think of it.
Yeah.
All right. When he says a guy's day to day, then you ask about him every day. Well, right now he's week to week. Just like Anthony Costanza's week to week, Philip Dorsett's week to week, Jarrell Freeman, their inside linebacker week to week. You won't see those guys Sunday night. Andrew's still at least a couple weeks away, I think. Hasselbeck's did a good job. You know, they probably have lost perspective here in Indy because they've got some pretty lousy sports talk folks in town. And when folks drive conversation, they reveal themselves as idiots. And it's really amusing for someone who's covered the team as long as I have. Here's something for you guys. You'll like this. Depending on who you listen to on a given day, and I want to congratulate you because you're the first one that I've talked to this week that's not uttered the words quarterback controversy. All right? Yeah, that there are people that are suggesting there's a quarterback controversy in Indy, that when Luck is healthy, well, we better stick with Hasselbeck because he's better. Yeah.
Crazy.
Let that wash all over you there. You feel that? Do you feel it? You like that? No, there's people that believe that. I got asked that this morning on a show I was on. First question, you think they should stick with Hasselbeck? Oh, really? Because he beat Tampa Bay last week.
Right.
He beat Atlanta. Gee, the Falcons are flying high right now. They're imploding. Beat Jacksonville in overtime. After their kicker missed two field goals in regulation and overtime, and he beat Houston when Houston was trying to get Ryan Mallett out of its system. So, and in those four games combined, the opponents gained more yards than the Colts. And Hasselbeck struggled to convert third downs. The offense didn't exactly light it up like a pinball machine. I think 27 points are the most they scored with him. what Matt has done at 40 years old, it's commendable, it's impressive, it's inspiring. I love Matt Hasselbeck. He saved the season for this team. Excuse me, they're still relevant in December, which if you told me before they're going to lose Andrew Luck, I'd say they were sunk. So I am not demeaning Matt Hasselbeck at all. What he's done is reminded people, sometimes you keep it simple, stupid, the KISS method Johnny Unitas subscribed to. Don't beat yourself with turnovers first. Make the smart play. Throw it away if it's not there. Above all, maybe get rid of the ball quick. These are some things that Andrew Luck hopefully is learning or appreciating more as he watches, because these are some of the things that got Andrew in trouble when he was playing. Andrew's maybe his biggest fault is he just doesn't want to give up on a play. The kid is so tough, and he just wants to hang in there and hang on the ball so long, he'll take a beating, and he'll take the shots, and he'll make a risky throw when you don't need to. I saw Tony Dungy come to this town. It took him 2 years to convince Peyton Manning, you don't need to force the ball into double coverage on third and 22. We can punt and play defense. Turnovers will kill you. Well, Andrew's got to learn that. Matt is showing him 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in the 4 starts, 64.7% completion percentage. Matt's been efficient. He's been smart. He's really helped the team play team football, offense working with defense type thing. I haven't seen that in a while around here, so it's been kind of cool. That said, Andrew Luck's still the franchise of the future. When they write the book on the season, they can say that Matt Hasselbeck saved it. He's the season savior. When they write the book on how long this team lasted in the playoffs, that's going to be on Andrew Luck.
Who's the biggest playmaker on defense?
Excuse me?
Who's the biggest playmaker on the defensive side of the ball?
Oh, we're still dealing with oxymorons. That's funny. No, I'm sorry. I crack jokes. I'm trying to make you guys laugh as much as anything.
Like government intelligence.
Yes. Jumbo shrimp, military intelligence, government intelligence, yes. quarterback controversy in Indy. These are all oxymorons. And it's one of my favorite words. I use it too much. That's been the biggest problem with the Colts defense in the time that, you know, this regime has been in place. DeQuell Jackson leads the team in tackles. You remember him from facing him two times a year in Cleveland. Junkyard dog, plays his butt off, always making tackles. He had an impact play, a pick six against Atlanta because Matt Ryan just threw the ball right to him. Not demeaning DQ because he can't cover very well, but, you know, that was room service, Matty Ice style. But they don't have a guy that necessarily you have to account for. And back in the day, you remember having to deal with Robert Mathis in his prime and Dwight Freeney in his prime, and they could wreck you if you didn't block them. As we saw in last year's Steelers-Colts game, the pass rush isn't nearly as good. Not last year, not this year. Mathis has played more after getting two games off, coming back from that Achilles. He's got four sacks. He's been okay. I wouldn't say he's great, but been okay. I don't think the Steelers need to double block him, double team him. Trent Cole, you know, hey, what does $7 million a year get you for 2 years at his age? It gets you his first sack last week in his 11th game. Thank you very much. Trent, you celebrated like it was the first sack of your career. I mean, really, it was ridiculous. Trent Cole had his best game last week. Congratulations. He finally found a tackle. I think it was Godz or Sherrills that he could pick on. How ironic, was the guy that the Colts cut in preseason. But anyway, I digress. They don't have a lot of playmakers. Mike Adams, the safety, has been outstanding. He's a veteran, been around a lot. You guys saw him when he was in Cleveland for a while, too. He's been hurt with an ankle. I don't know if he's going to play this week. He's a day-to-day guy, but he's missed the last two games. You know, he's a turnover machine. If you throw a loose ball or throw it down the field and make a mistake, he can grab it. But I'd probably say Vontae Davis is the best guy on defense because he's a, you know, Pro Bowl corner, capable of taking on the best receivers. That said, he's gotten beat a few times this year, and I am firmly convinced as a former fantasy owner of Antonio Brown that nobody can effectively cover him, at least not on Sunday night in an Indy uniform. Antonio Brown is the truth, so the Colts are going to have a real trouble with that.
Will they, you know, the Seahawks with Richard Sherman, they ended up letting him stay on Antonio quite a bit in that game. And Vontae, I believe, normally plays on the right side of the Colts defense. Will they let him follow Antonio Brown around the field? Or, how can we expect those two to match up during the game?
I think they'll have him follow him because they've been doing more of that with him this year. From the get-go, the Colts talked about how they needed him to expand his role because he's such a good corner. They didn't just want him to lock down a side. And they've had him cover top wide receivers in a lot of games. You get in trouble with Vontae if you have to make him think. I'm not trying to knock him here. I'm not trying to act like I'm a rocket scientist or anything. But Vontae is more instinctual and more just stick him out here. They're here. This guy here, cover him. And he locks him down pretty well usually. When you get into guarding in space and playing zones, that was so maddening last year. You know, Big Ben had his great game. And the Steelers, they put one extra offensive lineman up front. They sacrificed sending out one fewer receiver. But they were confident that Ben, with the time to throw, would eventually throw somebody open or somebody would get open. And the Colts, even though they were rushing five, six guys and couldn't get in there and had five guys back in coverage on four receivers, they couldn't play a man. They tried to play zone, and Vontae get lost in space. Oh, was it your guy? No, it was mine. Oh, but while you guys are talking about it, boneheads, they just scored again, you know, so it's a problem they're going to have on Sunday night. I don't see how that's changed. If I'm Pittsburgh, I do the same thing again. I'm like New England. Prove to me you've changed. Prove to me you can get at our guy. And I know there's talk about whether Ben will play. I'll be shocked if Ben doesn't play because the game means too much to the Steelers. And I just, you know, I got Ben on one of my fantasy teams, and I'm playing him. And I expect him to put up big numbers And even though it's against the team I cover, I'm just realistic. The Colts are lower bottom end in defense. There's a reason for that. They're okay, but they're not great. And I just, you know, if you let them hang around and you let Hasselbeck, you know, kill you with 1,000 paper cuts, not throwing the ball more than 10 or 20 yards downfield and moving the chains and playing smart football, you let them hang around, okay, they'll make a game of it, and you get to the end and Adam Vinatieri's kicking, you're going to lose. But if you play the way I know Pittsburgh's capable of playing and throwing the ball down the field and stretching it, and that opens up running lanes for D'Angelo Williams, I don't see how the Colts defense stops these guys. I really don't.
So you're picking the Steelers to win this one?
I am. In fact, I think last night I made a prediction online. I think I had it 14 points or 11. I think I had an 11-point spread. I'm being kind. I think it might be more than that. I don't think it'll be – maybe it won't be 51-34 like last year. And I know you guys are probably ticked off because, you know, they lost to Seattle like that. And, you know, I don't know, maybe you disagree. I think Mike Tomlin had a brain cramp kicking a field goal when it's 32-27. You show this propensity to be a gambler and go for two-point conversions all the time. I would think with a game on the line 3 minutes to go, you wouldn't settle for a field goal from the three or whatever it was. But that said, you guys played a hell of a ball game in a tough place, and you put up points and bend through for a ton of yards on a defense that's supposed to be pretty good. I have a lot of respect for the Steelers. I still do, even though I've got friends in Ohio that are still Steelers fans and tell me they hate Tomlin and he drives them crazy and he can't coach and he's this and he's that. I still think Ben's arguably one of the better talents in the league, and if you have him and Antonio Brown on the same field, you have a chance against anybody you play.
Bill, great stuff, man, as always.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we definitely know Roethlisberger's practicing today, so we do expect him to play Sunday night. And, yeah, it'll be a good one. It'll be a good one. And, I mean, if the Colts lose, do you expect the Colts to win the division?
I kind of do. It's not a guaranteed lock. You know, I expect Pittsburgh to win Sunday night. That's more of a lock than the Colts winning the division. But, you know, the Colts have Jacksonville on the road after that, and then they have Houston here, and Houston's never won an Indy all the years of the franchise since 2002, whatever. Even when the Colts were damn near winless, they got their first win, I think, against Houston that year. Houston's never won here, and people, well, it's in the past. The change of view. No, there's a stigma there, and they know that. It's in the back of their minds. And the Colts beat Houston and Houston already this year. So if the Colts win that game and beat the Jags the week before, I think they lock up the division. That's, people here will be fatalistic and say the season's over if Pittsburgh kills the Colts Sunday night or beats them. I would submit to you that the Steelers need the game more to assure themselves of a wild card, and the Colts can still, you know, at very least or worst, they'd be one game back if Houston won at Buffalo. And that doesn't bother me because, again, you're going to play them again. You still control your own destiny, and with the way the schedule sets up after this game, if the Colts are 6-6, I think they can win out the last four against Jacksonville, Houston, Miami next last week, and then Tennessee.
Phil, great stuff, man. Appreciate it so much. For our listeners, well, you can follow Phil on Twitter, at PWilson24, and get the latest and greatest on what's going on as we get ready for the game 8:30 Sunday night. Appreciate your time, man.
Hey, guys, thank you much, and good luck to your Steelers. I don't believe in the Cincinnati Bengals any more than you do, so stop, you know, pitying around and pussyfooting around and get serious and reclaim the division that's supposed to be yours, and, you know, stop letting Andy Dalton think he's an elite quarterback. I mean, this is ridiculous. The games you play with those Bengals, you crack me up. You really do. I know you like to make things interesting for everybody, don't you?
Hey, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
All right, Dave, our Pittsburgh boy, or our Ohio Steeler fan boy, Phil Wilson, giving us a very full rundown of the Colts.
Yeah, boy, I'd like to do it again with him in about a month and a half again somehow in the playoffs here. We might have to – that might be an hour and a half terrible podcast.
Exactly.
With that. But I always I look forward to even contacting Phil the other day because I remember how great he was that first time that we had him on the show. Always seems to shoot straight, no holds bar kind of guy. So we appreciate him being on the show as well. Folks, thanks for all the emails. As usual, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to send a holiday cheer our way, we are taking donations still. As always, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, find a donate button up top to the right, and donate and help support the cause that way, like many of you have already done and continue to do all this time. David, let's do it again on Friday.
Hey, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.